Hare Krishna. So I've been ordered by my superiors to be a part of this series of sessions on Narasimha Leela. Somehow I have been chosen like a duck amongst swans to speak during this Narasimha Leela, and I take it as a honor given to me to be able to study this chapter of Bhagavatam. See, there are two types of pranis. One is a sparrow which flies here and there and brings some eatables like worms and other things, and it brings it in the evening and gives it to the small birds, and they are all very eagerly awaiting. There is another prani which is the cow, which eats the grass and drinks, eats the grass and produces milk, which is drunk by the calf. But the milk is the digested food of the cow, which is fed to the calf. So these are two different types of devotees. One type of devotees who hear different things in different places and get very inspired and just deliver it here. So I am in that category, like a sparrow. Anyway, both are able to satisfy the hunger of the offspring or the calf. So hope you will bear with me. Whatever little understanding I got by hearing from various devotees, I'll present to you here today. So this chapter, 8th chapter, entitled Lord Narasimha Dev Slays the King of the Demons. So many of you might have been hearing the previous chapters where you might have heard about how Prahlad preached to his schoolmates. Like that beginning verse, he says, Kumar acharit prajnyo dharman bhagavatanih durlabham manusham janma tadapyadruvamartadam. So I would like to be a speaker about 5 minutes on Prahlad preaching to his friends, which forms the background for this chapter. Before Shanda and Amraka, the teachers of Prahlad, they go to report to Hiranyakashipu. So Prahlad was speaking to his schoolmates, who are all children of demons. They are coming from demoniac families, and you can imagine how difficult it must have been. Here Prabhupada is saying here, in the very first verse, purport, this is the effect of preaching of a pure devotee like Prahlad Maharaj. If a devotee is qualified, sincere, and serious about Krishna consciousness, and if he follows the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master, as Prahlad Maharaj did when preaching the instructions he had received from Narada Muni, his preaching is effective. So how did Prahlad preach? He preached with great compassion. First he was telling his friends, my dear friends, you see, he is telling them in the beginning that 5 years is the right age to begin practicing Krishna consciousness. His friends asked him, this is our age to enjoy. You look at other children, everyone is playing in this world. So why should we take to God consciousness at this young age? So then he told them, this first verse, Kaumaram acharet prajnyo dharman bhagavatani durlabham manushinjam. He said the human body is very rare. As Chanakya says, punarvittam, punarmitram, punarbharya, punarmahi, etat sarvam punarlabhyam, na shariram punah punah. He says, you will get, in every life you will get mother and father, wife and children, family and friends. In every life you will get some apartment to live or some land. In every life you will have friends, you will surely have a job and you will earn some money in every lifetime. But he says, but in every life you may not necessarily get a human body. That is very rare. So he says, while you have the human body, you should not waste it and take full advantage. That was the first argument Prahlad presented. And his friends asked him, why do you tell us to worship this Vishnu? We don't know anything about Vishnu. And you are insisting that we should worship this Vishnu. What is so great about worshipping Vishnu? Then he told them, yata hi purushasyeha Vishnu pado pasarpanam yadesha sarva bhutanam priya atmeshwara suhrit. Three things he told about Lord Vishnu to inspire his friends to take to the worship of Lord. He told them, Lord Vishnu is the most beloved, priya, he said. And Atmeshwara, he said, is the master of the soul. And Suhrat means he is a well-wisher. He is a well-wisher of everyone in this world. And he is the most beloved. And he is master of the soul. So because of this, he said, there is nobody in this world for you who will always come with you, even after death. Life after life, the one who accompanies you is your well-wishing friend, Lord Vishnu. So you have to surrender to him, my dear friends. And nobody else will come with you. Like that he preached to them. And then he also told them, you see, so he's a five-year-old boy, but because he has heard from the right source, Narada Muni, he has such deep understanding and realization. He is telling his friends that in this world, there is no dearth of happiness in anybody. You will get happiness everywhere. Sarvatra labhyate daivat. Yatha dukkam ayatnatah. He is telling his friends, somebody is born in a big bungalow, somebody is living in a slum, somebody is traveling in a BMW, somebody is traveling in a bicycle. You know, everyone is destined with some facilities and comforts in this world, which come with the body. It is called as a stored pleasure. Stored pleasure means, for example, the pig is having a stored pleasure to eat a particular kind of eatable. And a human being has a tongue to eat halwa. So that's called stored pleasure. So we have an affinity for eating something. And it's all awarded according to one's deha yogyena dehina, he said. Everyone gets what their quota is. In Hindi they have a saying, dane dane pilikaha kane wala kana, they say. In every grain, it's written, who is going to eat? Like sometimes you take a palm full of sweet rice, you know, greedily to put in the mouth, somehow it slips off your hand and falls, and some 100 ants come and finish it, because it is meant for them. So, the same manner, in this world, you will get what you are destined to get, he told his friends. And then he asked them, do you ever go to a temple to pray for suffering to God? And they said, we have never prayed for suffering. Who is the fool in this world who will pray for suffering? And then he told them, without your praying, you got the suffering, is it not? Then how did you get? Because it is allotted to you and you got it. Same way you will get happiness also. You will get what you deserve. Don't unnecessarily waste your time in this kind of economic development and material endeavors. He told them. That's why he says in conclusion to the speech in that series of verses, tat prayaso na kartavyo yatah ayurvyayah param na tata vindate kshemam mukunda charanam bujam. His friends asked him, Prahlad, what gain we will get by worshipping Vishnu like we get gains by doing economic development? Can you compare and tell us what gain we will get by adopting your path? So Prahlad was very intelligent. He told them, when you work hard in this world, when you try to make materialistic progress, what do you get? He said, you waste a lot of time. He said, you waste a lot of energy. And the result is you get something which is taken away at the time of death. You know, in the Greek mythology, there is a story of a man who was punished by the king. A very severe type of punishment. You know what it is? A man has to take a huge boulder, a round stone, huge, and he has to roll it and take it up the hill. And he takes it higher and higher and higher. When he reaches up the hill, he has to leave it. It will come back and roll back to the ground. And while he is lifting it all the way up, there will be 5-6 soldiers who will be whipping him in case he doesn't, make an effort to roll it up. And in this way, he cannot even stay at one point, say, you know, peacefully. So they will keep whipping him and make sure that he takes it to the top. And then he has to leave it. And this he has to do all day. Can you imagine? And also when you have to take a round stone, it's a bit difficult. Why? Because, you know, it may slip off. When you're going midway, it may slip and fall away. So you have to take it very, very carefully. So in this material world, our material life is like that. Because you will see that everyone in their families, you will see, like I had gone to a colony to give a program on Bhagavad Gita. So I began my class asking, is there anyone who can tell me something about the problems of life? I asked them. So one of them said, sir, we don't get 24 hours water supply here. He said, we get only, you know, drinking water comes only 2 hours a day. That's our biggest problem in life. You know, he was telling, yeah. Then he asked, any other problem? I thought somebody may come up with something else. One fellow said, they made such a big colony, we don't have a library, you know, to read newspapers and other things. So you find people oftentimes, when they think of problems, they think of petty problems and immediate problems only. They rarely think of the real problems of life. Imagine if somebody is traveling in a train and suddenly there is a siren, there's an announcement that there is a fire in the train and everyone has to get down. Imagine I have a luggage below the seat and above the seat and I have chained some of the luggages. How many of my luggages would I carry before I rush out of the train? Will I carry anything? People would find out, is there an emergency exit somewhere? I can jump outside. Everyone would be looking for the life. So, the Shastras say, Bhagavaddham laud chalo. Quit this world as soon as possible and go back to Godhead, because there are innumerable problems in this world. Srila Prabhupada says, when we think there are some problems in this world, then we become busy sorting out the problems. When we understand this world itself is a problem, then we will want to quit this world and go back home, back to Godhead. That's what Prabhupada taught in his books. How this world itself is a problem. Because his material body itself is a problem. So, Prahlad Maharaj in this way preached Bhagavad Dharma to them. He told them that just see, you know, like taking a boulder up the hill is so difficult. Like in a family, if you go, people are worried that my child should get good marks. You know, parents are pushing the children, study well. You should get into IIT or NIT or something. And then they study and then they get, and then afterwards you have to go to America, you have to come back. At every stage, the child gets a push. And parents are worried, my daughter should get married. She should not elope with a boy. You know. And they're worrying that the son should not get into drugs or something. They have all kinds of fears. Parents, you will see. So the material life is like pushing that boulder up the hill. Very meticulously, attentively, alertly, cleverly, all possible ways. One is going up. People who are living the world know better than the sadhus like me. They know about how the world is. And then when they reach the end of their life, they become 70 or 80, somebody says, at last I could purchase a flat. You know, I could have a 2 BHK flat. I have my own car now. I have so much savings in the bank. And then death comes without an announcement. Suddenly one day. And one leaves behind everything and has to quit the body. And that is like what? Allowing the stone to roll back to the ground level. So material life is like this. Take everything to the top, everything comes down. Again, take everything to the top, come down. This is birth after birth going on. Again and again. But he told his friends, my dear friends, spiritual life is not like that. He said, Na tata vindate kshemam mukunda charanam bhujam. He said, if you take to Krishna consciousness, you will attain the lotus feet of Vishnu and you will never come back to this world. And that endeavor is a purposeful endeavor. It's a meaningful endeavor, useful endeavor. And an endeavor which leads you to the unlimited bliss, boundless bliss, happiness. And even if you couldn't make it, still you are not a loser. Why? Because whatever you have done will remain intact and you will continue from where you left off. So in this way, he very beautifully spoke to them. You see, materialism is well known. Materialism means converting a thatched cottage into a skyscraper, as Prabhupada says. Or going from a bicycle to a plane. That is economic development. But there is another type of materialism, which is religious materialism. which surely has to be spoken in India. Because in India, of course, in Christianity also we have religious materialism. What is the religious materialism? People practice religiosity for again increasing the material goods, increasing their material life. One fellow started a laddu shop, a sweet shop, but the sweets were not selling so well. So he arranged to put a Ganapati near his shop. And he told the people, please buy laddu and offer to Ganapati. And a long queue of people came. So they would offer laddu to Ganapati and he would take it from behind and put it back in the shop. In this way, he had a very good sale. Big sale in a day. So he thought, by bringing Ganapati, my sales have got boosted up. Like some people keep a Devi and they say, buy these saris and offer to Devi. And they offer to Devi and they take it behind again and keep selling it over and over again. So people go, they go to Vaishnavi Devi, people go to Shirdi, many places and other places. People don't even think about who that person we are worshipping is and what is that teaching. Like you see, people come from all corners of India to Shirdi. So from they come to Pune and they go. So I asked one such person, behind the Sai Baba something is written, have you seen? He said, I have not seen that because I only could think of what I wanted. I don't even see who is sitting there. That is only known to devotees. Sabka Malik Ek, only devotees know it. Devotees have seen that. So this is called religious materialism. Religious materialism means I and mine is the focus. And you can use any type of God ultimately to fulfill our own purpose. That is why Prahlad taught them, don't use Krishna, but please Krishna. That is the teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam teaches that if you get Krishna, you get everything. You get anything short of Krishna, you got nothing. That is Bhagavatam teaching. You see, the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita also says the same thing. Yavanartodapane sarvata samplutodake. Practice of Krishna consciousness is like a flowing river. Why? One can do all activities in that, everything. Not like the pond which is meant only for drinking water or only for bathing or only for washing the body or anything. So Prahlad Maharaj taught the Bhagavad Dharma very expertly to his schoolmates, to his friends. And when the friends heard, they were asking many questions to Prahlad. One question surely they asked him. Prahlad, all of us are under the control of the teacher, Shanda and Amarga, teachers, these two teachers. We are all small children. We have never been allowed to go out anywhere because we are under their control. And all the more so for you, you are son of a king like Hiranyakashipu and you live in the palace. You have never come out of the palace. How is it that you know all this knowledge? How is it that you are so brilliant? You are so wise. And everything you speak makes so much sense. And then he told that he heard from Narada Muni when he was in the womb of his mother. And in this way, by hearing from Narada, he became enlightened. This Bhagavata Dharma is given by Shuddha Vaishnava, like Narada. And he told his friends, you cannot waste your life. This is high time. All of you now take to this chanting and dancing. And in the ashrama, there was chanting and dancing and all of them became, like you see in this back cover, Bhagavatam. Prahlad Maharaj and his friends chanting and dancing. So now Shanta and Amarka saw that and they became very frightened. They thought that already Hiranyakashipu is an angry king. He has already chastised us before for not training Prahlad in politics and diplomacy and economics and all these things. Now we try to train him, but he is even spoiling others also. He is making everyone a Hare Krishna. So they got very frightened. They thought that before the king detects what Prahlad is doing, we better go and report to him. Thinking like that, now they are coming to the king. Chandanamarka, they came and reported. When Chandanamarka, the sons of Shukracharya, observed that all the students, the sons of the demons, were becoming advanced in Krishna consciousness because of the association of Prahlad Maharaj, they were afraid. They approached the king of the demons and described to him. So now, Hiranyakashipu has heard them and he has become very angry. Kopa vesha chalad gatraha putram hantum manodadhe kshiptva parushaya vacha prahaladam atadarhanam. You see, Hiranyakashipu is a very graphic description here. It is said he was extremely angry, so much so that his body trembled. And he decided to kill his son Prahalad. Hiranyakashipu by nature was very cruel. Feeling insulted, he began hissing like a snake trampled upon by someone's foot. On the other hand, Prahalad was peaceful, mild and gentle, and his senses were under control. He stood before Hiranyakashipu with folded hands. Actually, Prahalad Maharaj, for his age, he was not to be chastised. Yet with staring, crooked eyes, Hiranyakashipu rebuked him. Here Prabhupada quotes one very important verse. In the purport he says this: Ayushriyam yashodharmam lokanashisha evacha hantishreyam si sarvani pumso mahadatikramah. So mahadatikrama means torturing great souls or creating, mistreating the great souls. Lord Vishnu had told the demigods that this Hiranyakashipu will go on with his atrocities and his sense gratification program will come to a full stop when he will mistreat Prahalad. That is the time he will be destroyed. This was already told by Lord Vishnu to the demigods. Actually, Hiranyakashipu went on increasing his torture of Prahalad. At one point of time, Prabhupada explains in one of his lectures, he wanted to feed poison to Prahalad. So he took a glass of snake poison and gave it to his wife and told her, "Now you feed this poison to your child." Which mother do you think will want to feed poison to her own child? And the mother wept bitterly. But Hiranyakashipu tortured her, insisted. So when she gave it to Prahalad, Prahalad looked at the poison and he saw Lord Narayana lying in the Anantashesh, in that black poison. And he told his mother, "My dear mother, you are feeding me such amrit. Thank you very much." And he drank it. And nothing happened to Prahlad by the protection of the Supreme Lord. A Mahabhagavat devotee always feels the presence of the Lord and the protection of the Lord, both. He is always protected at every time. And he has no fear, practically fearless, even in front of such a atrocious king like Hiranyakashipu. And now, having seen he is not dying, now Hiranyakashipu has decided that I will personally kill him. You see, the atheistic people, they have no faith in God, which is well known. But not only that, they even ridicule the devotees of God, and they think the devotees' absorption in God is a kind of imagination or an intoxication. One famous quote you must have heard: "Religion is the opiate of the masses." So what is the meaning of that? The religion is considered to be like some kind of hallucination or intoxication that makes people dull and inactive and lethargic or something. So these statements are made by people who are completely in bodily consciousness, absorbed in bodily consciousness. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, while explaining about Kanishta Madhyama Uttama Adhikari, has given a beautiful example. He says, when a tree, huge tree in the forest, falls on the ground, it produces a big sound. But somebody in the town may say, who is going to be there to hear that sound of a tree falling in the forest? No one can hear it. But there, ignorance is revealed by this statement, he says. Why? You may say no one is hearing that sound, but there is one person who is hearing that sound. Who is it? The Super Soul or the Lord, Supreme God. He is hearing the sound. And then after giving this example, he says, God is one person who sees everywhere everything simultaneously with unblinking eyes. And with also the ears, just like Krishna says. Sarvata shruti manloke sarvama pratyatishtati. He says that. He says that, you know, my eyes are everywhere. Sarvata panipadam tat sarvato okshi shiro mukham sarvata shruti manloke sarvama pratyatishtati. He says, sarvata pani, my hands are everywhere, my legs are everywhere, my ears are everywhere, my face, my head, everywhere they are present, he says. So, a Mahabhagavad devotee realizes this. A Mahabhagavad devotee knows nothing can escape Krishna's attention. Everything is known to Krishna. But atheists like Hiranyakashipu thinks, you know, where is God? Can you show me God? How amazing it is. Prahlad is saying God is everywhere. And Hiranyakashipu is asking God is nowhere. That's why sometimes people write that famous sentence, God is nowhere, and nowhere you can cut into two, which makes it God is now here. So, while Mahabhagavat feels God is now here, what atheist feels? God is nowhere. So, here is a very classical example of extreme atheist and extreme devotee. And the extreme example of a devotee who is fearless devotee. And he is seeing God everywhere. And Hiranyakashipu, he gets wild and is torturing his son. You see, there is a verse which comes elsewhere in Bhagavatam which says how even if one conquers the whole world, but if they have not conquered their own mind and senses, such a person will lose his cool head even in trivial circumstances. That's what happened to Hiranyakashipu. The whole world was doing Jai Jaikar for Hiranyakashipu. And one small 5-year-old boy refused to accept him as supreme. And here Hiranyakashipu is so angry. And Prabhupada says here in the purport, when one is impudent towards a highly authorized devotee, one is punished by the laws of nature. The duration of his life is diminished. Four things he says. When a person becomes a mahadatikrama, then he is punished by the laws of nature. His ayu is reduced. And he loses the blessings of superior persons. And the results of his pious activities, his tapobalam, is reduced. And his ayu is reduced. And the blessings are reduced. Just like when Indra offended Brihaspati, he lost all his good fortune. All the demigods, including headed by Indra, they all became beggars, practically. So here, it is even a greater offense because he is trying to kill a Mahabhagavat devotee. And here he is using these words in Sanskrit which are very painful for devotees to hear. Devotees don't like to hear a Mahabhagavat devotee chastised with such words like this. But still I will speak it for one reason. I'll tell you why. See, he is saying, Sri Hiranyakashipu Ruvacha, he durvinita mandatman kulabeda karadhama stabdam macha sanodvrittam neshyetvadya yamakshayam. He is saying so many bad words. He is saying durvinita. He is saying unintelligent person. Manda means dull headed. Kulabeda karadhama means one who adama means lowest of mankind. Disruptor of family. Stabda means so stubborn. Mat shasana odvittam. You have violated my rule. Or you have violated my power to rule you. And all these things. Although this is a meaning here, Vishnu Chaitanya Thakur has given a different meaning, which he says that Saraswati, Goddess Saraswati, here Prabhupada says, Vishnu Chaitanya Thakur has explained these words in a very interesting way. As can be interpreted from the side of Saraswati, the mother of learning. Not only here, you will find in different sections of Bhagavatam, like Indra chastising Krishna, or Shishupal calling ill names to Krishna. They are all oppositely interpreted by Vishwanathacharya Thakur and other great acharyas to show how these people are indirectly glorifying the opponent, who is either the Lord or the devotee. Now here he says, Durvinita. He says, Duhu vi nita. He divides it like this. Duhu means Dukalayam, Dukalayam, which is the material world. Vi means Vishesh. Nita means to enter. So, Hiranyakashipu is telling this Prahalad, hey Prahalad, you have been specially brought into this world to preach to all your demoniac friends and to bring me also ultimate liberation. That's why you have been specially brought into this world. Thank you for coming. Either is saying, Durvi Nita. Dukalayam Vishesh Nita. Then Manda Atman means what? Manda means dull-headed people. Atman means the guide. So Manda Atman means you are a guide for dull-headed people like me. He's telling. Many souls in this world are dull to spiritual life. So you have become their leader. You are the guide, he's saying. Kulabeda Karadama means what? There are many people who work for their own kula. To increase their prestige, status of their family and their dynasty and their vamsh. But amongst all of them, you are the topmost. Why? Because you are well-wisher of others. You are making those great people working for their kula lower than you. Kula beda kara adama. You make them lower than you. So you are greater than them, he's saying. Stabdha means you are such a great soul that you never respect the asuras. You only respect Lord, the Supreme Lord. So he's calling him a stabdha. Yamakshayam, he says, I am supposed to go to the court of Yamaraj, but instead, Kshaya means, like today is Akshaya Tritiya, we say, no? Kshaya means to diminish. So, Yamakshaya means you diminish the power of Yama and you liberate me and send me back to Godhead. So, you are Yamakshaya. In this way, the verse spoken by Hiranyakashipu is very beautifully explained by Vishnu Chakrita Thakur. So, by reciting this verse, so the Vaishnavas will not feel pained seeing that Prahlad is being so badly chastised by Hiranyakashipu. And then, having become so angry, Hiranyakashipu asked a question to him. He said, the Loka and Saha Ishwaraha, all the planets along with their presiding deities, they all would tremble when they see my anger. When Hiranyakashipu would twist his eyebrows and look up at the sky, all the demigods would hide behind the cloud. Nobody had the guts to show up. You will see later on also in the fight between Hiranyakashipu and Lord Narasimha also you will find the demigods are eager to see Hiranyakashipu that he is killed. At the same time, they are not having enough guts to look at his sharp eyebrows and his big eyes. So, during the fight, demigods are peeping out from their planets and watching how the fight is going on. But then, sometimes Lord Narasimha, just for the sake of fun, he would release Hiranyakashipu. And then the demigod should become extremely afraid. When he is released, he should not look up because he will come to know that we are eager for his death. In case he survives, afterwards he is likely to punish us. Hey, who all are watching me from the top? Come down, put them in the jail and torture them. So they were so afraid, demigods. So, actually you find this kind of description in many places in Bhagavatam. Before Agasura was killed, there are many places like this. Because demigods are mixed devotees, they have fear. Unlike Prahlad, who is fearless. Prahlad is right in front of Hiranyakashipu, not fearless, not having any fear. And demigods are far above, still they are fearful. That is a proof how when one becomes a Uttama Bhagavat, he becomes completely fearless. So, he is telling all the planets and all the demigods, presiding deity of those planets, would tremble in my, when they come in front of me. How is it that you have no fear for me? And the Prahlad is answering here. He's telling here. Na kevalam me bhavatascha rajan savaibalam balinacha paresham parevare mi stirajangamaye brahmadayo yena vasham pranitaha. He said, my dear father, you are talking about my strength. He said, my strength, your strength, and all the living beings' strength, including the demigods headed by Brahma, it all comes from only one source, and that is Lord Vishnu. You see, in Bhagavatam, this point is stressed in many places. Lord, like when Narada was a small boy, he is asking his father a question. You will read in one of the Bhagavatam chapters called Cause of All Causes. There he is asking, "My dear father, I have looked all around me, but I don't find anybody besides you. I found only you. And the whole world appears to be in your hand like a kara amalakavad vishwam. Vijnana asat," he says, "asitam tava." He says, like amalaka fruit in the hand, you are holding the universe in your hand. Everything is in your control. Maybe, I think you are the ultimate God, he's telling. And hearing this, Brahma is scolding his son Narada. See, Narada never deserves any scolding. He is accepting the scolding on behalf of all of us, who sometimes may consider ordinary man to be God. So, he is telling his son a beautiful example. He is saying, just like the sun, it lights up the stars, the moon, and all the light-emitting objects in this world. The source of all light is only one, which is the sun. Like that he says, Lord creates and I subsequently create. Lord gives me the seed and then I am like a gardener who waters the seed. Like that he said. So, here Prahlad is saying something similar, that you know, all the devatas, they all gain the strength from Lord Vishnu. And you see, Lord Vishnu, his greatness is what? Or Krishna, greatness is, he doesn't want to occupy anybody's throne. Like you see, Lord kills Vali and is posting Sugriva there. Lord is killing Ravana and is posting Vibhishan there. And Lord kills Hiranyakashipu and is posting Prahlad as the king. So Lord doesn't take anybody's post in this world. So Lord is not usurping anybody's post at all. But he has a great plan for every living being. Anybody who goes against the Lord's plan, the Lord kills them. Why the Lord kills the demons? You see, in this room now, imagine if there is one thief who has secretly come into this hall. How many people you think will be disturbed? If one thief enters into a hall where 1,000 people are sitting, how many people will be disturbed? Yeah? How many? Everybody will be disturbed. Why? Because one thief can steal anybody's property, and that can cause tension to everyone else possessing something. Is it not true? Like you, if announcement is made, somebody's mobile is lost, then everyone will check their mobile. My mobile safe. Is it not true? Then everyone is disturbed by one thief. That is why Bhumi is telling that the liars and those who are asuras, they are a great burden to her. Because even if they are minority numbers, still they create a lot of headache for others. And they create trouble for everyone. So, then Lord comes in this world to kill the asuras. As he says, Paritranaya Sadhanam and Vinashati Duskritam. He comes for that. So that the original mission of the Lord should be established. That is the goal. The original mission is to, what is the original mission? What Prahlad did to his friends in the school, teaching them Krishna consciousness. That's the original mission. So, and Prahlad is giving answers to his father's question. But one answer we would like to focus a little more. This is a very brilliant answer he gave. And Prahlad is telling, "My dear father, please give up your demoniac mentality. Do not discriminate in your heart between enemies and friends. Make your mind equipoised towards everyone. Except for uncontrolled and misguided mind, there is no enemy in this world. When one sees everyone on the platform of equality, one then comes to the position of worshipping the Lord perfectly." So here, Prahlad is telling his father that you have an uncontrolled mind and uncontrolled senses. That is why you are suffering. There is no other enemy for you in this world. You see, in this world, if somebody flatters me, I would consider him my friend. Or somebody gratifies my senses, I would consider him my friend. Or somebody would satisfy my ego, I would consider them my friend. Or somebody agrees with my opinion, then we may say it's my friend. Is it not true? Our friendship is based on how everyone aligns with me. Or if somebody allows me to clone them. Cloning others means, behave exactly like me. Do exactly. Do what I say and do as I do. If somebody can do this, then I would agree him as a friend. And all others, I would call them as an enemy. If you carefully see, for example, a particular nation creates a group of scientists. So when they get their doctorates, subsequently they prepare a bomb for the country so they can throw on their neighbors. Isn't it? Every country prepares bomb for their own country. So there is a fight between one country and another country. And then within the country also there is a quarrel between one state and another state. In South India, in the Telangana, they were asking for a separate state some time ago. Isn't it? So they want it as a separate entity. Some years ago, who was that? Some Chettipoti Ramulu or somebody. One fellow, he fasted unto death to get Andhra Pradesh as a separate country. He wanted Andhra as a separate country. Yeah, somebody died for it. So we find even within a country there is quarrel between states, one state and another state. Does this river belong to our state or your state? Isn't it? There is a quarrel. And then within a state also there is quarrel between different people of different caste, creed and color. Is it not true? Even within the state you will find. And even within the caste, there are people who say in our caste this is higher and that is lower, they will say. Even in one caste also. Yeah, there are people who see like that. Yeah, like in Brahmanas also, they say there are finer Brahmanas who are better than another type of Brahmanas. Like that. So people see classes like that. And what to speak of within the caste, even within the same caste, within same society, people quarrel even with the neighbors. People even quarrel with the neighbors. Yeah. And what to speak of that, even in the same family there is quarrel. Sometimes you see in India, parents may tell, if you go to that city, don't go to their house. Because with them we have some enmity, some four generations before. They will say. You have seen that? Even within family there is quarrel. You will find, even within one family. Father, mother, children, sometimes they fight like anything. Some families end in divorces. Sometimes there is a fight between father and son and husband and wife and all that. And sometimes a person finds there is quarrel inside one's heart only. One will find there is a fight inside one system. Like for example, you will find a husband and wife sometimes they have a quarrel. Wife tells the glories of her home. And husband will tell glories of his home. And they will have a terrible fight going on sometimes 4 or 5 hours also. And after that you will find when they go to their respective home, there also they will quarrel. It's very surprising, no? Isn't it? Very, very amazing it is. See, they are quarreling for one thing, and they are quarreling with the same people whom they glorified here. Amazing. And that is why Prahlad is telling this point. That this kind of enmity, what you are talking, that enmity is not outside you, it's within you. And then he is telling, there are no enemies for you in this world. He is telling, the greatest enemy is the mind. I read an article by Iswaran Satyadas Maharaj about friend and enemy. There he says, not only sometimes there is quarrel in families, sometimes quarrel in offices. He says there can be quarrel even in a religious institution, religious organization. Actually, any religious organization is started with the good intention that they can create unity in the whole world. That is the purpose. Srila Prabhupada has started this ISKCON society. What for? So that there can be unity in the whole world. Like one devotee was telling that Prabhupada gave this morning and evening program. He gave morning program to create unity between devotees. And he created the evening program of preaching to create unity in the world, which is outside. So, yes, we want to bring unity. But if we cannot be united even with devotees who are within our organization, then how are you going to teach unity outside? Isn't it? We can't teach what we don't have. Just like we say Madhyamadhikari cannot give more than the platform of Madhyamadhikari. In the same manner, we only can teach what we ourselves live, what we ourselves imbibe. So, how can there be a quarrel between two devotees? Is it ever possible? Yes, it is possible for various reasons. If a devotee is proud of one's own service and considers that everybody else's service is good for nothing, then there can be quarrel. Or one wants everyone to do the same service what one is doing. Or one never praises others for their services. Then there can be quarrel. So, amongst devotees, if devotees cultivate this quality of appreciating one another's service and respecting people performing different type of services. And not only that, and also understand that Krishna has created all of us with different capacities, different capabilities and capacities. And everyone will be able to do only whatever best they can do. If one can understand this and live with their understanding, then it is possible to bring about unity and cooperation. In fact, the spiritual world, the central theme of spiritual world is like orchestra. All the devotees of Krishna coming together and offering service to Him for His pleasure, for the pleasure of divine couple. And unity is a very vital factor there, the spiritual world. So, everyone is unique and everyone is differently talented. Everyone has different capacity of devotion also, different levels of devotees. But they are all coming together to offer this wonderful offering of devotion service to Krishna. So, Prahlad Maharaj is telling here to him, please give up your demoniac mentality. Do not discriminate in your heart between enemies and friends. Make your mind equipoised towards everyone. Except for the uncontrolled and misguided mind, there is no enemy within this world. Manaparam karanam amananti. Ar manayeva manushyanam karanam bandha moksha vedisa. Once upon a time, Janaka Maharaj, he had a very different type of experience one day. He found himself going for hunting to the forest. And as he was wandering, roaming through the forest, he lost his route and he was searching for the route. But all afternoon he was roaming in his horse and he became very thirsty and very hungry. At last he found a house, one cottage, where he went and found a very old lady. And he asked her, "Oh mother, can you give me something to eat? I'm very hungry." So she said, "I am practically invalid. I am bedridden, I cannot even move from my bed. And my family members have gone out. So there is some rice kept, if you want, you cook yourself. And you can take." So immediately I took the rice and he cooked. And he made some khichdi, he made. And he was about to offer and sit and eat. But when he went to wash his hands and he came back, in the meantime he found a forest bull who came and put its mouth in that food. And he felt so miserable. "Alas, alas," he cried out. And there was no other grains left at home. So he couldn't cook anything. And then he went here and there, searched and got some fruits from the forest. So when he washed the fruits and kept the fruits, in the meantime he observed the fruits somehow absconded. He didn't know how. They were missing suddenly. "I kept it here, where it went away? Who has taken it away?" He was wondering. And in this way, he was thirsty, he was hungry, and he lied on the ground screaming, "I am going to die now." At that time, suddenly he got up from his bed. It was only a dream. So when he got, it was a very profound dream. Sometimes you all may have experience that a dream is such a profound dream that after you get up in the morning, still you look around whether, where am I now? Because sometimes part of our consciousness is still inside the dream. So Janaka Maharaj came out of his dream and then he called his ministers and told, "Get all the learned panditas in my country." And he called all of them. And then he asked them, "You see, sleep is almost half of the day. And the other half of the day we do our other activities. Now I got this type of dream. Now I am little doubtful whether what I dreamt was a dream or me living with all of you as a king, that is a dream." and actually I am in the forest hungry and thirsty and I am about to die. Which one is a dream? I don't know. You are selling. Then the panditas told, no, Janaka Maharaj, you are such a great king. You have so much opulence, wealth, horses, elephants, chariots and everything. Why do you bother about all this? You be peaceful. Anyway, that was a dream yesterday night. I think you have taken it too seriously. You know, don't worry. You know, be peaceful and all, they told him. He immediately ordered all of them to be put inside the jail. He said, you are bogus pandits. You people are trying to pacify me just because I am a king. You are flattering me. I want to know the truth. You are not able to convince me properly. And one of the pandits who was put in the jail, his son was a very special child. This child, when he was in his mother's womb, many sadhus used to come and speak to this lady who was pregnant so that she will hear some nice satsanga and she will get some good sanskars. So many sadhus would come and speak. And this child would be inside the womb, but will be saying, like that he would be saying. And he would sometimes give comments also. Sadhu, very good. So, sometimes Mayavadi sadhus would come. And whenever the Mayavadi sadhus would preach to the lady, immediately this child inside the womb would scream and say, hey, this is a bogus. Bogus. And one such impersonalist sadhu, he became angry. Hey, your child is cursing me. And he said, I am counter-cursing your child back to become Ashtavakra. And that child became Ashtavakra, Muni. So later on when this child was born, because of having heard from so many wise people, this child became a very wise person also. But he had 8 twists in his body, in 8 places. So he was called as Ashtavakra Muni. So this Ashtavakra, his father also was put in the jail by Janaka Maharaj. He was also one of those pandits, you know, who was put in the jail. So Ashtavakra told his mother, now I will go and deliver my father, bring him out to the jail. I will go and meet the king, Janaka Maharaj. So he went to meet Janaka. And he told Janaka, I have the answer to your question, he said, which is true. And he told the king, my dear king, when you are in the daytime, you know, in your daytime body, you identify with the daytime body. And you don't think anything of the dream. In the dream, you think of the dream body and dream activities, and you don't think anything about the daytime body, Jagriti body. He said, besides these two situations, there's a third situation where the soul exists, the Atma. Atma exists. So he said, you are different from both the situations. Night dream is a dream in a dream, he said. And daytime, our activities is a dream. He said, why? How it is a dream? It's a dream in the sense that for the soul, the situation in the material body is a small flash in the time span of eternity. It's like a bubble in the ocean. Bubble goes for a short while and it bursts open. He said it is a very short time. This material body is given. It changes from childhood to boyhood to youth to old age and it dies off. So in this way he gave him the Atma Bodh. And Janaka became very grateful and very thankful. And Ashtavakra Muni asked him, so what Guru Dakshina are you going to give me for this? Janaka said, immediately called for the ministers and got some gold and silver and everything. Gave a big pack of wealth to him. Ashtavakra said, I can't even touch it. He said, you are not giving me what you possess. This is not yours, he said. Then he asked, whose is this? He said, this is all your forefathers' property. Then the king said, if you want, I can give you the whole palace. He said, that also belongs to your forefathers, he said. Then the king was wondering. Then he asked Ashtavakra Muni, can you tell me what is that one thing which I possess, which is owned by me? If you say like that, whatever I am going to give, you will not accept from me. Is there at least any one thing you can tell me which I possess? That I will give it to you. And Ashtavakra Muni told him, the only thing you possess is your mind, he said. And that mind you have to give me if you accept me as your guru, he said. And Janaka Maharaj said, he took a kamandalu and did argument and said, I offer my mind to you. Please take it. Now what is the proof that Janaka Maharaj has given his mind to Ashtavakra Muni? Further, Ashtavakra Muni wanted to conduct a test. So every day he would speak from Bhagavatam, and many people would come and sit and hear the recitation. So one day when he was speaking like that, one soldier came and complained to the king, "My dear king, there is a big fire in your palace behind. People are trying to put off, nobody is able to put off, please come immediately." And Janaka Maharaj refused. He said, "Nothing in this world belongs to me. I came with an empty hand and I am possessing my forefather's property. And when I die, I will leave it behind and go. I am simply like a watchman guarding a house, like a watchdog." Like a watchdog, what it does, you know, the watchdog may sometimes think I am the owner of the house. Actually, he just keeps safeguarding the house, that's all. Nothing belongs to him. So Janaka said, "Nothing belongs to me. And I cannot leave this Bhagavatam class because I have given my mind to Ashtokra Muni." And Ashtokra Muni listened. Once, twice such things happened. And Janaka never left the class. And then Ashtokra Muni called him and told him, "Now I agree that you have given your mind to me." So in this way, Janaka Maharaj, by very attentively listening to the Atma Bodh, he came to be called as Janaka Videha. Videha means one who always lived in the consciousness that I am not the body. I am the spirit soul. That is one meaning of Videha also. So the best way to conquer the mind is to hand over the mind to Guru. Hand over the mind to Krishna. And there is no second way to control the mind at all. Although Rupa Goswami in the first verse says Vacha Vegam, Manasa Vegam, Krodha Vegam, Jihva Vegam, and all those things, he says six Vegams. These Vegams can never be controlled without dovetailing them in Krishna's service. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevana, Bhakti Ruchate. That is why he is talking this verse first, because eventually, subsequently, one can follow the other things. First, one has to hand over the mind. What is the meaning of handing over one's mind to Guru? Obedience to hearing the instructions of the spiritual master and applying them on one's life. That is actually giving our mind to him. Arana kori ho mane asha. We sing every morning, Guru Puja. Arana kori ho mane asha means, in my mind, let me not harbor any desires against your will, against what you will want me to hold in my mind. So, one has to, like Narada boy, he tells that he had those four qualities. Dante, Akridaneke, Anuvartani, Alpabachani. Anuvartani means completely obedient to the spiritual master, handing over the mind to him. And then spiritual master knows how to... I always used to have a question. This faith, which we talk about, as a parameter for advancement in spiritual life. This faith. So how can one increase one's Shraddha? Because if we increase our Shraddha in spiritual life, then naturally we advance also very fast. So I got two answers. One is this obedience. Obedience to the spiritual master. Not only hearing him, applying what he teaches. And another one is the Seva Bhav or service attitude. Service attitude leads to increase in Shraddha. So any activity done with service attitude will eventually lead to advancement. So His Holiness Satchinandan Swami Maharaj, in his book on Nectar Notion of the Holy Name, he gives five parameters to measure our service attitude. He gives five questions, very good questions that we can evaluate our heart. He says, do I want to serve other devotees or do I want to be served by others? Do I care for other devotees or do I mostly care about myself? Then he says, do I respect other devotees or do I strive for respect from others? And he says, do I feel glad upon seeing others' advancement or do I feel envious of them? Then he says, do I depend on my guru and my superiors for what I want to do in life? Or do I depend on my whimsical mind to make decisions in life? He says, think about these five things. He says, if we pay attention to these five questions, our service attitude can be increased very easily. And by increasing service attitude, we can get Shraddha. And Shraddha is the heart of devotional service. And the backbone of Shraddha is enthusiasm. That's why he places first, Utsaha, Nishchaya, Dhairyat. And what is enthusiasm? If somebody says they have Shraddha in their heart, the practical application of what we learned from the spiritual master is called enthusiasm. The Shraddha within the heart will manifest without as practical application. That is enthusiasm. So, these points may be worthy or helpful for us in our personal lives. But here Prahlad is telling Hiranyakashipu that, you know, your problem, he says, is your own mind and the senses. The mind is troubling you. Mind is torturing you. So that is why he is telling, the first thing he is teaching his father, conquer the enemy within yourself. The enemy is not outside. The enemy is inside. Conquer the enemy within yourself. And if you have conquered the enemy, what is the next step we should do? Preach with compassion to others who have not yet conquered the enemy. Like here you see, Hiranyakashipu has not yet conquered the enemy. So Prahlad is preaching to him with compassion. That is the best service that one can do. And one should never descend down to the platform of sorting out, this is my friend, that is my enemy. If we do that, our life will become extremely busy in that sorting out business of friend and enemy, friend and enemy. It's a trick of the mind, and we will not have any time to do Krishna consciousness. We'll see that. We should know that every soul is potentially divine. No one is bad. Everyone is good. That is the right assumption to make. But they are covered over with some impurity. So, Yudhishthira Maharaj was called as Ajata Shatru. Did he have enemies or he had no enemies? He didn't have any enemies, but Duryodhana considered himself enemy of Pandavas. Although Yudhishthira never considered Duryodhana his enemy at all. That was whose problem? Duryodhana's problem. Not Yudhishthira's problem. Yudhishthira never considered himself enemy of anybody. He was the well-wisher of all living beings. And that is the right state of consciousness that Prahlad is teaching his father. And that same thing he taught his friends also. But in the Gurukula, he was taught the opposite. How to learn those four steps. Samabeda Damadanda. Who is your enemy? Who is your friend? You know, make ties with your allies and attack your enemies. Divide and rule. You know, and doing politics, economics and all that. And you see, when Hiranyakashipu heard it, he got really wild. When he heard this good instruction, he said, "You rascal, you are trying to minimize my value as if you are better than me at controlling the senses. This is over intelligent. I can therefore understand that you desire to die at my hands. For this kind of nonsensical talk is indulged in by those who are about to die." That is why it is said, good instructions to a fool makes him lose cool. Immediately. You give good instructions to anyone, like Upadesho hi murkanam prakopayana shante. It is said, some birds had made a very beautiful nest in a tree and they were living very happily, even in the rainy season, because the nest was very beautifully made. They were living peacefully. When they came out of the nest, when the rain stopped, they saw one of the monkeys who was living in the same tree. It was completely drenched. Whole body was drenched and he was sitting very sadly. And the birds went to him and said, "Oh, my dear friend monkey, you know, because you are living as a neighbor in the same tree, we wanted to offer you a suggestion. Generally, when there are no rains, before the June, July comes, what you should do? You should make a house for yourself. Just see how we have made a house for ourselves. Why don't you make a good house for yourself so you can live peacefully in rainy season?" The monkey became so angry. He said, "You are joking that I have been drenched in this rainwater? Just see what I will do." And he jumped up and he tore the nest of the birds into pieces and threw it hither and thither. So, the story is said, why? Because the birds were trying to give good advice to a foolish monkey. Give advice to a fool and the fool will become angry. So Hiranyakashipu became very angry. Like this. You see? And then he started challenging Prahlad.
Oh, most unfortunate Prahlad. You have always described a supreme being other than me. If he is everywhere, then why is he not present before me in this pillar? So, he says many things here. So, he is speaking against Vishnu, Lord Vishnu, and he is challenging. Where is Lord Vishnu?
You see, Prahlad is being insulted by Hiranyakashipu in various words, as we find in the several verses with so many bad words and everything. So, how does a devotee take insults, or how does a devotee take difficult situations of suffering? If you see, different people approach the sufferings differently. A Kanishtha Adhikari thinks, you know, why Krishna is allowing these sufferings to come upon me? Has Krishna forgotten that I am a devotee? Maybe I will have to go and remind him again that I also wear tilak and kantimala and everything. So a Kanishtha is surprised when sufferings come in his life. And sometimes a Kanishtha even wonders, maybe after I took to devotional service, a lot of sufferings are coming. He thinks like that. Actually, the opposite is true. One was supposed to get enormous sufferings and God only gives a token. But that is a Kanishtha, that is the way he faces. A Madhyamadhikari, how he faces? He feels that these sufferings are coming due to my own account. And he thinks that, you know, I should tolerate them. And in case I cannot tolerate them, I should depend on Krishna. Just like Gajendra depended, or Draupadi depended. Whereas Uttamadhikari devotee doesn't see suffering as suffering at all. Uttamadhikari devotee sees sufferings as an opportunity to become more serious in Krishna consciousness. You see, Kunti Maharani is praying, oh my dear Lord, Vipadas Santuta Shashwat, Tatra Tatra Jagadguru. She is telling, please give me sufferings again and again, more and more. Sometimes when we tell these things, people wonder, who is there in this world who will ask for more sufferings? We have enough of it. And we are already trying to work on it and how to get rid of it. And they are asking us to pick more. So this verse is a paradoxical verse for some people. How can somebody pray for more suffering? One thing is true. It's not that a devotee is eager for suffering. It's not that the devotee says, actually a devotee is ready for anything. If I need a shock, let Krishna give me a shock. Because some people need shock treatment in their life. Otherwise they become complacent. They become very complacent. So, you got a shock. Immediately they become very careful. Okay, now let me become a serious devotee. Isn't it? And like, you know, Jesus says, you know, afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted. He says, if somebody is very afflicted, somebody says, oh, Prabhuji, you know, I am a fallen soul, and I have wasted my life, you know, so many lifetimes accumulated, so much sins, is there any hope for me, you know, somebody is coming. Then you can say, don't worry, Krishna is there, you know, Krishna is willing to accept you, don't worry. So you have to comfort the afflicted. Another fellow, he is too comfortable, you know, he doesn't understand the value of or importance of spiritual life, then you have to pinch him. You have to give a pinch to that fellow. He becomes like a couch potato, you know. You know, just crunching crackjack biscuits, watching TV and having obesity problem, relaxing. And he doesn't want to take to spiritual life. So you have to give a pinch to wake up that person. Afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted. Jesus says in Bible also. So, yes, a devotee is not eager for taking sufferings. But if Krishna wants to give sufferings, a devotee knows, probably this treatment is necessary for me to advance in Krishna consciousness. That's what a devotee feels. Sometimes the doctor gives a bitter pill. Sometimes he gives a sweet pill. You don't go and ask the doctor, that sweet pill was very good. Can you give me more of it? You can't ask. Whatever he gives, you accept. But Kunti Maharani's prayer is very meaningful. Why? Because she says, Bhavato darshanam yatsya. Apurnarubhava darshanam. Why I want sufferings, Krishna? Because in those sufferings, I can see you, she says. Once upon a time, a boy, while playing cricket, he got his knee wounded. It started bleeding. So he was immediately taken to the nearby hospital, where he found a very pretty nurse, who in a very motherly way, she put a bandage around his knee, and her love and care was so much appreciated by this fellow. Later on, he was playing cricket after a few months. Heart of hearts, he had a desire. It will be nice if he get wounded today also. Mm-hmm. Why? He was not behind getting the wound, but he was behind seeing that nurse. The goal is seeing the nurse. In the same manner, Kunti is telling, I want suffering. Why? Because I will get to see you, Krishna. Bhavato darshanam yatsya, apunar bhava darshanam. So, because seeing Krishna is the goal, so she is not a Dukkadasi, she is Krishna Dasi. So, devotee is not a Dukkadas. Actually, the Maya Das, Sada Udas, we say, no? Krishna Das, Vindas. So, a devotee is not a Das of Udas. Devotee is always happy. But a devotee doesn't mind sufferings, if those sufferings can lead him to Krishna. For example, sometimes, like today morning, Gaurang was speaking so beautifully about Madhavendrapuri, going and getting the chandan. How much, actually he was telling towards the end of his lecture, all those pains and sufferings and hurdles, Madhavendrapuri, they didn't appear to be sufferings at all for him. Because those sufferings gave him an encounter with Krishna several times. He got Krishna in the dream. Again, he could go to Chirchar Gopinath temple. He could taste the Amrit Keli. And three times the Lord appeared in his dream. So, these sufferings what he endured are worth it in order to get that type of darshan. So, in the same manner, Prahlad also here is willing to accept the sufferings inflicted by his father in the form of very scorching words, very painful words, insulting words thrown, hurled at him by his father. And these are not just insulting words. His father is about to kill him. He is telling him that right now I am going to kill you now. Till now I had arranged for people, different people to try killing you. But now none of them could kill you. Now I am going to kill you. Now who is saying this? This Hiranyakashipu was not an ordinary person. You know, when we find the external environment temperature very hot, we put air condition, isn't it? Whereas when Hiranyakashipu found it very hot, he would stare at the sun with crooked eyes. And immediately the sun would lower his temperature. That was Hiranyakashipu. He could control the sun and moon. And in fact, the wetting agent, the drying agent, heating agent, who are they wetting, all these things? Varuna, Vayu, Indra, he told all of them, give your resignation and quit the job. And they asked, sir, who will do this job? He said, I will do it myself. Now that I have become a single king, I have monopoly over everything. That was Hiranyakashipu. In fact, the Bhumi was also giving fruits and trees and grains and everything out of fear for Hiranyakashipu. Like that. Hiranyakashipu had complete control over the demigods and the three worlds. And nobody could dare to stand in front of him. And he is telling now to Prahlad that I will myself behead you. I will cut off your head from your body. The next moment, he is taking his sword in his hand and coming. I am going to kill you next moment. Can you imagine? How, you see, the Mahabhagavata devotee, like Prahlad, his confidence in the Lord is so great that he will not even pray to Lord for help. Some devotees pray to Lord. Draupadi prayed to Lord, or Gajendra prayed to Lord. But Ambarish Maharaj, and here we find Prahlad, they didn't even pray to Lord for protection also. That is their platform. Because they were so confident that if Krishna wants me to die, I'll die. If Krishna wants me to survive, I'll survive. He was willing for that. So, this confidence in the Lord is very important. Nowadays they are teaching everywhere courses on self-confidence. They think, if you think you can win, you can win. You just have to believe that you can. Well, I don't know where they got this stuff from. Like for example, say I want to go to Leh Meridian, Pune. But somebody gives me the map of Leh Meridian, Bombay. If I have the Pune map, can I reach the Leh Meridian here? Even if I have a positive thinking. Even if I have a positive attitude, even if I am very self-confident, can I reach? That somehow or other people have this notion. Like one time, a boy considered that those fellows who speak English are the most confident, he thought. So he thought, I also want to learn English and speak very confidently. So he tried his best for 1 year, but only 3 words he could learn. Yes, no, and very good, that's all. Only 3 words he learnt in 1 year. And then suddenly, somehow people captured him and took him to court. Some murder had happened. So in the court they asked him, are you the murderer? They asked him. He thought that I should speak in English so that they will think that I am a very impressive personality. So what did he say? Yes, he said. And then they asked him, was there anyone else present at that time? He said, no, he said. So they said, so we have decided to hang you. He said, very good, he said. You know? So this was his overconfidence. You know? So this kind of confidence is not what Shastras are speaking. Shastras say confidence means confidence in Krishna. Confidence in Guru, confidence in Shastras, confidence in devotees. So having confidence in these things is the real confidence. Not the blind confidence in oneself. Foolish confidence. So Prahlada had confidence in Narada Muni. Prahlada had confidence in Lord Vishnu. He had full confidence. And he didn't have to fear at all. You see? And then it goes. So he asked here, because you are speaking so much nonsense, I shall now sever your head from your body. Now let me see your most worshipable God come to protect you. I want to see it. He's saying. Prabhupada is saying, demons always think that the God of the devotees is fictitious. Many times demons, they are always suspicious. You see, to see God face to face, one needs qualification. There was one Lal Babu. Prabhupada also talks about Lal Babu in one of his places, one of his writings. So he was a great cloth merchant. He had a huge shop. He was making a lot of money. So he would be taking his bead bag and chanting. So he would be chanting peacefully, but some grahak would come, customer comes. And now he has to attend to him. Then he would take some money from him and count the money. And then give him a 5 meter cloth. And then come back and sit and chant again. And he would peacefully continue for a few more beads. Somebody else would knock and say, I want some 10 meters cloth. Then he would again give him and come back. So one day he considered seriously, I am counting money, Japmala, for some time of the day. Other time of the day I am counting money, rupee notes. So he considered, out of these two counting, which is more valuable? He thought very seriously. And within his heart he got the answer. Counting beads is more valuable. Because my age is also going and I should not waste my life now. So he decided that and he closed the shop and he sold it off. And taking permission from the relatives, friends, he left for Vrindavan. So when he went to Vrindavan and he established a temple and Krishna's deity, he saw, he placed the cotton in the, near the nose of the deity, there was a cotton, and he saw the cotton moving. And when he went close, he saw the Lord was actually breathing. He could see the movements in Lord's body. So because he went to the Dham, went to the Lord with such deep faith and devotion, the Lord also reciprocated with him. So it's not that one can see God very easily. With faith and devotion, one has to approach the Lord. That's why Prabhupada says that prema anjana charita bhakti vilochanena. So, a pure devotee is able to see God everywhere, like Prahalad. And that also is explained by Bhaksan Saraswati. What is the meaning of seeing God everywhere? Like sometimes you wonder, is one seeing thousands of Krishnas all around? How does a pure devotee see God everywhere? Is he seeing in the bulb? Is he seeing in the wall? Is he... How does he see exactly? Is Krishna, how many Krishnas does he see? Now, sometimes we wonder about this. The explanation is given. Even Narada, Shukadev, Vedavyas, if they have to be called as Uttam Adhikaris, he says, it's not that they see one Krishna standing in different places. Their vision is like this. That they are, at this point of Uttam Adhikari, they are fit to see the Lord. Or they have achieved the qualification to see the Lord. At the same time, they are also having a great overwhelming desire to see the Lord. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is asking, you know, when will I attain, when will there be tears in my eyes, and he's asking. So that overwhelming love for the Lord makes this whole world to vanish from their sight, and they are able to see the Lord of their heart everywhere. It's exactly like a businessman seeing money. Now, how does a businessman see his money? Does he see rupee notes everywhere? How he sees? Like he is going in the car, he is saying, that bungalow, I think it must be, I think, 10 crores or 20 crores. He just, he can easily point out and tell you what money must be, which bungalow. Or if somebody is coming to his shop, as soon as a client comes, he peeps out of the window and looks in which car he has come. BMW, okay, accordingly he has to tell the rate to that person, isn't it? So, or if somebody gives him a gift, many people, as soon as they get a gift, what is the first thing they do? They estimate. What is the value of the gift? Sometimes in marriages, somebody gives a gift, they note down, this is 5,800 rupees gift. And then when they go to their house marriage, they'll go and give it back. And they go, sometimes people note and keep it, who gave what gift? And they give it back also. So you, and anything he sees, he counts in terms of money only. Bada party or chota party? Immediately. And he always sees in terms of money only. He sees a building, he sees car, he sees people. Money, 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 money is honey. That is a money-minded man. Similarly, a lusty man, he thinks the whole world is filled with women for his enjoyment. He thinks like that. That is a lusty man. He's a lusty rogue. Actually, the Shastras say you should look at every woman as your mother. Except one's wife, one should see as a mother. But a lusty man sees the whole world to be meant for his own pleasure only. You see, the surprising thing in this world is people take Maya very personally. Maya doesn't give any personal intention to anyone. But people take Maya very personally. Like sometimes a boy thinks, oh, maybe that girl loves me or something. And then he goes to check and he gets a big beating with a chappal or something. Why? Because he realizes it later. Because he imagined a personal invitation. But people don't take the Shastras personally. When you talk about Shastra, people say, oh, I think it was spoken to Arjuna, I think Krishna spoke to Arjuna. Isn't it? But when it comes to Maya, if somebody is passing by, they think, oh, so-and-so is very beautiful, maybe meant for my pleasure only. Who told it's for your pleasure? That is your imagination. So I used to be surprised. One small boy, he came once in Pune and he was weeping to me. I asked, why are you weeping like this? So he was feeling lusty for one woman who is fit to be his mother, so big body, and he is so small. So I said, this is really Maya. How one can take Maya so personally? So a pure devotee sees Krishna everywhere, like a lusty man seeing beautiful woman everywhere, or like a wealthy man seeing currency notes everywhere. Like that, a pure devotee sees Krishna everywhere. And a pure devotee also sees the whole world resting on Krishna. Like for example, all this, the Kantimala, you see all the monies are there. You cannot see the nylon thread inside. But you remove the nylon thread, all this would be scattered here and there. Like that, a devotee knows very well. Everything is in order because Krishna is Maya Adhyakshana Prakriti. Krishna is behind everything. He knows that very well. And he knows Krishna is the cause of everything. Krishna is the source of everything. And Krishna is the essence of everything. He is the very best of everything. Devotee knows that. So Prahlad Maharaj is seeing, Prabhupada was walking with his son one day. And the son was telling, my dear father, in the sky I saw the moon at home. Now we are in the shop and now also I am seeing the moon. So he was said, Prabhupada said, the super soul is like that. Wherever you go, he follows. So there is no place where God is not there. He is everywhere. So Prahlad saw like that. And he had no fear at all. Although his father was threatening him like this. And then at this point of time, in fact Prabhupada writes here, when Hiranyakashipu was threatening to kill Prahlad, Prahlad certainly saw the column standing before him and his father. And he saw that the Lord was present in the pillar to encourage him not to fear his demoniac father's words.
This is first time I read myself when I read in the purport.
That Prahlad Maharaj saw inside the pillar Lord standing. Like in Pune, once we read this Narasimha Leela drama. So we had actually three pillars, but one pillar was stouter than the other pillars. And everyone knew that, you know, Narasimha will come out of this pillar only. You know? because it was very strategically placed also, you know, in the center of that stage. So everyone was aware. And it is also slightly open. And then, you know, as soon as that fellow touches it, Narasimhadev comes out. And he is standing already. I thought we do it only in dramas. But here Prabhupada says, Narasimhadev was already standing and that was observed by Prahlad. Prahlad was looking at the, staring at the pillar. And he knew that the Lord is standing and Lord knew that Prahlad is watching. And then Hiranyakashipu thought that, okay, you are looking at the pillar. Okay, let me ask you, is your Lord in this pillar? He asked. So Prabhupada says that because Hiranyakashipu wanted to break that pillar, Lord was personally present there, as he says here. Hiranyakashipu marked Prahlad's observation and asked him, where is your God? Prahlad Maharaj replied, he is everywhere. And Hiranyakashipu asked, why is he not in this pillar before me? Like this, a devotee can always see the Supreme Lord, whereas non-devotee cannot, Prabhupada is saying. And then, yeah, being obsessed with anger, Hiranyakashipu, who was very great in bodily strength, thus chastised, exalted devotee, son Prahlad, with harsh words, cursing him again and again, he took up his sword and got up from his royal throne and with great anger struck his fist against the column. At that time, there was a fearful sound. The sound was appearing so loud as if cracking the covering of the universe. Sometimes we hear a thunderous sound in the clouds on a rainy day and people feel as if this thunder is going to destroy our house to pieces. That kind of sound comes. Actually, it doesn't destroy. We sometimes fear like that. In the same manner, the Lord's cracking sound was so loud that even elephants in the forest, they put their tail between their legs and ran into the bushes out of fear. And all the demigods, along with their wives, in their own planets, they were all trembling. Even demigods, they thought our planets are going to be destroyed, they were thinking. Even the leaders of demons, Prabhupada says, even Hiranyakashipu and other demons, they were afraid hearing the sound. What was the sound? Lord Narasimhadev's roaring. Even a tumultuous roaring. The tumultuous thundering sound was the proof of Lord's presence. The demons like Hiranyakashipu could now realize the supreme ruling power of the Lord. And then here comes a very beautiful verse. This is a very famous verse. Satyam vidhatum nijabhritya bhashitam vyaptim cha bhuteshva kileshu chatmanaha adrishyata tadbhutarupamudvahan stambe sabhayam namrigam namanusham. It is said in this verse, from that pillar, Lord Narasimhadev appeared. And when the pillar broke open by the fist of Hiranyakashipu. And how the Lord appeared is explained here. To prove that the statement of his servant Prahlad Maharaj was substantial, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of an assembly hall, the Supreme Personal Godhead Hari exhibited a wonderful form never before seen. The form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in that assembly hall. Narasimhadev Bhagavan ki. Please repeat after me. Ugram Viram Mahavishnu Jvalantam Sarvato Mukham Narasimham Bhishanam Bhadram Mrityor Mrityor Namamyaham Shri Narasimha Jaya Narasimha Jaya Jaya Narasimha Prahaladesha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Bringa. So these prayers are offered to Lord Narasimhadev, who appeared from that pillar. Ugram Veeram. It is said he was very ugra, but he was all auspicious. He was all auspicious. See, his nails were like cutting tools. You have seen cutting tools? I am speaking in this language because I once upon a time was a mechanical engineer. So, how many of you have seen cutting tools? You have seen, which we use in the lathe. So, Lord's nails were like a chisel or like a cutting tool. But later on, when the Lord touched Prahlada's head, that was like a soft cushion, like a lotus flower. So, in Bhagavatam, it is explained how this contradiction of Lord is simultaneously Vajradapi Kathoram, Kusumadapi Komalam. Both are proved in the Lord's hand. Lord is soft for his devotee Prahlad, and he is having a sharp nail for the demon Hiranyakashipu. Prabhupada is saying here, by appearing from the pillar, the Lord encouraged his devotee, saying in effect, "Don't worry, I am present here." By manifesting his form as Narasimhadev, Lord also preserved the truth of Lord Brahma's promise that Hiranyakashipu was not to be killed by any animal or by any man. See here, Nijabhritya Bhashitam, it is said. Nijabhritya means his own devotee. Nijabhritya Bhashitam. In this way, after Lord Narasimhadev appeared, Hiranyakashipu was bewildered, seeing that sight of, who is this? Is it an animal? Is it a man? What kind of form is this? He was very surprised. He had never anticipated anything like that. Because he had got many boons, as you all know. And here the Lord had fulfilled all those boons. Prabhupada says there one sentence here. This is the meaning of Supreme Personality's omnipotence. Prabhupada is writing about how the Lord resolves all the paradoxes. There is nothing paradox for the Lord. Some people ask a question. Can God create a stone which he himself cannot lift? People ask this question. Actually, either way you will be defeated if they ask you this question. If you say, yes, God can create anything and everything, then what will they ask you? That means he can create a stone which he cannot lift. That means he is impotent because he cannot lift, they will say. And you say that, hey, where is a stone which God cannot lift? I don't think such a stone can be ever created by God. Then what they can say? Oh, that means God cannot create something. Is it not true? Such a very paradoxical question. So they can defeat you both ways. So this is a question coined by atheistic people. And Krishna gives answer to this question also. What is his answer? Yes, God can create a stone which he himself cannot lift. Like for example, Nanda Baba's sandals, sometimes Krishna would take on his head. And then bring it and give it to him before he goes to the field. Sometime Mother Yashoda will ask Krishna, can you please bring that bartan, bring that vessel? I have to do some work. And Krishna will go there and try to push that vessel. He can't even move it. How can he lift it? Then he will tell her that, Maya, I cannot lift it. Not possible. It's beyond me. He would say like that. So, yes, God can create something which he cannot lift. But then he created the Govardhan Hill, which is 21 kilometers in circumference, and he lifts it. Is it not true? No human being can ever even dream of that. So Prabhupada said, yes, God can create something which he cannot lift, and then he will lift it also. He said, first he cannot lift, and then he will lift both. So there is no unresolved paradoxes. Like one boy asked Prabhupada in a class, Swamiji, every time we come to your class, you are glorifying Krishna's beauty. Because in Prabhupada's books, you will always find, always there is glorification of Krishna, isn't it? Of course, if you are non-envious, you can hear that glorification very happily. Adaram maduram, vadanam maduram, nayanam maduram, hasitam maduram, hridayam maduram, gamanam maduram, madhuradipate rakilam maduram. See, everything about God is sweet. His lips are sweet. They are shining in the moonlit night of Chaitra month, when he is playing on his flute. And Krishna's eyes are like lotus petals. His face is like a full-blown moon. And even his heart is very sweet. How is his heart sweet? When Krishna came to the house of Vidura, as you all know, at that time Vidurani was taking bath. And then Krishna was battering the door. And then she dressed up herself when she came. And it was such a pleasant surprise for her when she opened the door and the Lord was standing right in the front of the door. Immediately there were tears streaming in her eyes. Because Vidura and Vidurani were great pure devotees of Lord Krishna. She immediately called Krishna inside and she took a chatai and she wanted him to sit in a clean place. And she went round and round in the house. She couldn't find a very clean place to make him sit. And Krishna also went on walking behind her wherever he went. And then he asked her, where do you want me to sit? At last she put it in one place. And then Krishna sat there. And then after that, you know, out of love, she fed him the peel of a banana. And she was throwing away the bananas. But then later on, Vidura came to the house. He brought big, big bananas and sweets and pedas and everything he brought, which he wanted to feed Krishna. So he was scolding his wife. See, you have fed him peel, banana peel. Is it something you feed to your such a special guest in our house? And then he took bananas and he fed bananas to Krishna. And Krishna said, Vidura, your bananas are really good. But Vidurani's banana, what she fed for me, that was better. Krishna said, because it was mixed with such deep love. He said, so this is Krishna whose heart is maduram. Hridayam maduram, gamanam maduram. Even his walking is very beautiful. Everything about him is beautiful. Venur madura, renur madura, panir madura, padau madura, buktam maduram, suktam maduram. Actually, in this place it is nritya maduram, sakhya maduram. But I remember this buktam maduram. Why? You see, Lord's eating is also very beautiful. When he's sitting with all his friends in the bank of the Yamuna. And all friends, you know, one boy is eating a rava laddu and giving to Krishna. Hey, Krishna, taste this. It's very nice. And then he says, very true. It's very nice. And this way, different boys are giving different items to Krishna. Sitting around him like lotus petals. And his eating is also very beautiful. Not only that, even his sleeping is very beautiful. Like a sleeping beauty of Krishna. Ranganathji, what is he doing in South India? Sleeping. And thousands of people come to see a sleeping person. Can you imagine? Now when we sleep, who wants to see? Isn't it? You see, even his sleeping is very beautiful. And in Jagannath Puri, Lord Jagannath is eating in the morning. His breakfast is almost the size of this room. He eats so much. So his eating is also very beautiful. So Lord is very beautiful, so Prabhupada would often glorify Krishna's beauty. And one boy got fed up who was coming to the class. He said, Swamiji, every time you say Krishna's beauty, beauty, we are now bored with the beauty. Is God not having an ugly side? Only He's only beautiful? Can you little bit talk today more about God's ugly side? And Prabhupada said, yes, God has ugly side also. That is Vishwarupa Darshan, Prabhupada said. He said, you know, in Vishwarupa Darshan, he is crushing the skulls with his skulls. And when the blood is coming out, his tongue is lelious. He says, his tongue is coming out. He says, you know, he's licking the blood. And Prabhupada said, you want to see that Vishwarupa Darshan? And one boy asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you said our universe is small, so probably this Vishwarupa Darshan is small. What about the other universes? Prabhupada said, this one Vishwarupa is good enough for you. So, anyway, people ask, Prabhupada said, it's not that God is only beautiful. God has a ugly side also. And when Prabhupada was explaining about the Vishwarupa, that the sun and moon are God's eyes, he was telling. And one boy asked, but Prabhupada, I'm seeing the sun and moon, but we are not able to see his face properly. Where is his face? Prabhupada said, have you not seen the cats in the night? What do you find? Have you seen cats in the night? What do you say? Yeah. In darkness, you can only see eye. And material world is darkness. So you can only see God's eyes only. You know? You know? So, in this way, Prabhupada was very logical. He was full of logic. I don't know from where I went to where. So before this, where was I? So, I was telling you, Yeah? What? Yeah, before Adhanamadhuram was so sweet, everyone is remembering only Adhanamadhuram. What was one step before that? I was telling about Narsingadev. Huh? Yeah. So Narsimhadev, of course, see Narsimhadev's form is not as, you know, Narsimhadev's form is not as sweet as Krishna, it's a ferocious form. But Prabhupada once told a devotee, that devotee was a very angry devotee. And the devotee went and admitted to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, I am ashamed to tell you that I get very angry and very wild on devotees." Prabhupada said, "Simply you take darshan of Narsimhadev, all your anger will be gone." He said, "Narsimhadev is so angry, your anger will be finished if you see his anger," he said. So Ugranarsingha Narsimhadev has a ferocious form. I was telling about his hands, how his hands are soft and his nails are like cutting tools. This form in Lord Narsimha appeared. All the demons got frightened. And even Hiranyakashipu was wondering, "Oh, what is this creature?" I was telling about paradox. There is no paradox that is unresolved in God. All the contradictions are resolved in Him. In this way, there is a very vivid description about Narsimhadev's form. It is said, you know, his form was so huge, touching the clouds. You know, his hairs, you know, they were flowing like this. And the clouds were all driven away in different directions. And his eyes were so powerful. Even the luminaries in the sky, they all became, they lost their shining power. Even the stars and moon and sun and everything, because his eyes were like glowing. And his nose were like a cave. And his tongue was like a sharp sword, which was shaking. And the Lord's neck was short, and he had a very strong built shoulders, body. So this form is explained very vividly here. So Hiranyakashipu is seeing this form. And then subsequently there is a fight. Very beautiful description of the fight. You see, the stunned scenes or fight scenes described in Bhagavatam are the most nectarian to hear. You can read this section in Bhagavatam. Varahadev fighting with Hiranyaksha. Wonderful it is. See, whatever we see in this world is a very cheap imitation of the original. So this is original. Sometimes you see in the movies, you know, villain is trying to have a big fight with the hero, and hero is falling off a cliff and only his hand is up, and the villain is trying to crush his hand with his shoes, and everyone is at the edge of their seat, you know, what's going to happen now, and the heroine is screaming, isn't it? But at last, everyone knows what will happen finally. Somehow that fellow with one hand, he'll give one more hand and then he'll come up. But actually, where all these things are coming from, here Lord Narsimhadev captured Hiranyakashipu like a Garuda capturing a snake. But then he didn't capture and keep it and immediately kill him. What is the fun if he immediately kills him? So he wanted to have some fun. So what he did? He left him for some time. So just like Garuda would sometimes leave the snake for some time. So when the demigod saw that the Lord captured Hiranyakashipu and he left him, and the demigods were all peeping from the clouds, as I told you, when they saw Hiranyakashipu was free now, they got extremely frightened. They all hid themselves again inside, because they thought there is a possibility that Hiranyakashipu may survive. They thought like that. But if Lord has decided that Hiranyakashipu should die, then he can never survive. So there's a beautiful description of the fight between Lord and Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu, in fact, Lord Narsimha's effulgence was so powerful. Hiranyakashipu was sometimes in the sky, sometimes on land, taking his shield in his hand and sword in his hand. He would be flying. But he closed his eyes while fighting with the Lord, because Lord's glaring effulgence couldn't be tolerated by him. But Lord very easily captured him, put him on his lap, and tore up on his belly and took out the intestines and garlanded himself. And it goes on like that.
And then the Lord loudly laughed. See? Yeah. And then Prabhupada is saying here in one of the purports here. Lord Narasimhadeva's mouth and mane were sprinkled with drops of blood, and his fiery eyes, full of anger, were impossible to look at. Licking the edge of his mouth with his tongue, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narasimhadev, decorated with a garland of intestines taken from Hiranyakashipu's abdomen, resembled a lion that has just killed an elephant. Lord Narasimhadev ki
jai.
See, the Lord, powerful Lord. This form is very fearful for us to hear about. But later on you will see Prahlad Maharaj is telling a beautiful verse. Naham bibhimyajitateti bhayanakasya jihvarka netra bruguti rabhasogradam shtrat antrasrajakshatajakeshara shankukarna nirhrada bhita digibha aribhinnakagrat. So he is telling, my dear Lord, I am seeing that your eyes are shining like powerful luminary, like a sun or moon, and your mane is soaked with blood, and your form is fearful to look at for many people, but I am not afraid, he is saying. Why? I know very well, just like for a cub, the mother lion is never fearsome at all. Maybe for a lamb, a lion may be fearsome, because a lamb is eaten by a lion, whereas a cub is never fearful of the lion. So, the Lord and his devotees are one in quality, the quality of selfless love, the quality of pure love for one another. So the devotees also reflect the qualities of the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada says, you know, that the devotee is like a gold ring and Lord is like a diamond. Diamond is kept on a gold ring. So very nice, they are made for each other, the diamond and the gold ring. So the Lord and the devotees, they are beautiful. So Prahlad says, I have no fear at all when I see you in this form, because you are a personification of love. For example, imagine when you are a small boy or a small girl, your brother may put a lion's mask from inside a room. Bah! Like that he says. Immediately he may scream and cry, isn't it? But next moment he lifts up the lion's mask. And he laughs at you. Then your fear is gone. Is it not true? And your fear is gone immediately. Similarly, Prahlad is able to see this is Sakshat Krishna, Sakshat Vishnu. He has come in this specific form. You see, even Brahma, Shiva sometimes cannot ascertain when the Lord comes in these various avatars. Suddenly one day, Lord Brahma saw from his nose, zoop, like that, something came out of his nose. It was very small, but then it became thumb size, it became this man hand size, it became almost pig size, it became elephant size, and it flew into the sky. It was a form of a boar, wild boar. And all the demigods were seeing, they thought it is some Rakshasa has come or something. Nobody knew who it was. Even Brahma could not ascertain who it was. And then when the wild boar, he looked at the demigods and sages were perturbed and confused. The Lord smiled. And with his hair in his body, he just moved his body like this, in a very heroic way. And like that, all the waters came and sprinkled on all the devatas and rishis and munis. And the water was so fragrant. Just like the pujari throws water from the altar, you know. Sometimes he throws, what is that water? Rose-scented waters. So when all the sages and saints and demigods smell that water, immediately they became free from their confusion and with folded palms they offered prayers. Sahastrasir sapurushaha sahasraksha sahasrapa. They started offering Purusha Sukta. So, Lord revealed who he was that time. Similarly, here the Lord is revealing to Prahlad, I am Lord Vishnu, I am Krishna, don't fear. And he is not fearful at all. He has no fear at all. He is very happy. And only the demons are fearing. And after that, all the demons came and, you know, all the followers of Hiranyakashipu came and they all came in big numbers. Lord Narasimha very easily killed them. He was just the tip of his nails. Very quickly he finished them all. All of them. See, they came in thousands with raised weapons and faithful followers of Hiranyakashipu. But Lord Narasimhadev killed all of them merely with the ends of his nails. See, Prabhupada is saying something interesting there. He says, at the present moment, throughout the entire world, the atheists are extremely numerous. They are trying to prove that there is no God and that everything takes place due to combinations and permutations of material elements. Within a second, Hiranyakashipu and his followers were destroyed. And similarly, if this godless civilization continues, it will be destroyed in a second, simply by the movement of one finger of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The demons should therefore be careful and curtail their godless civilization. They should take advantage of the Krishna consciousness movement and become faithful to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, they are doomed. As Hiranyakashipu was killed in a second, the godless civilization can be destroyed at any moment. You see, Hiranyakashipu civilization can be compared very much with godless civilization of the modern times. If you see, Hiranyakashipu forced nature to yield fruits. Is it not true? In the modern times also, they are putting fertilizer to bring out yield very fast. Isn't it? And also, they are not allowing the fruits to ripen naturally. They are putting smoke. They are like I heard about this grapes. In grapes, what they do? Nowadays, if you buy grapes, it's whitish in color. You see? Because they give some phosphate bath. They give. Where they put saccharin on the surface of the grapes. They put saccharin. And inside the grapes, there is only water. There is no juice. Because they very hastily they grow the plant. Without allowing the juice to be produced. So inside there is water and outside there is saccharin. So you get a taste of grape, something like that. So in this way you find artificial, like Hiranyakashipu was asking his people to destroy all the gopurams. And now also you are finding in this Kali Yuga they don't want temples. They want to, Hiranyakashipu wanted the hermitages to be destroyed. He wanted Brahminical civilization to be destroyed. The modern times, in the name of secularism, they are promoting atheism. Secularism has become another name for atheism now. Like that. And Hiranyakashipu want to kill the cows. Similarly, modern times also. You can make a one-to-one comparison. But ultimately, you will find Hiranyakashipu, his chest was like a vajra. His chest or his body was like a tenacious metallic body. But Lord Narasimhadev, how did he tear it? Like an elephant tearing a sugar cane, tearing it into two pieces. Like that Lord could tear his body. Similarly, Prabhupada is warning here in this purport. If godlessness continues in this world, Lord will again appear and destroy this godless civilization. So Prabhupada always brings the shastric truths to day-to-day understanding. So that people can very easily understand. Like in Ishvarapanishad, Prabhupada says, this cunning gentleman, Hiranyakashipu, Prabhupada says, was making a one-sided program of only materialistic progress. So Prabhupada is writing there also. Material progress, one-sided material progress will be doomed. He says that. So, Srila Prabhupada often would say, between the fight between Hiranyakashipu and Prahalad, Prahalad will always win. The fight between Kamsa and Krishna, Krishna will always win. In the same manner, in the fight between devotees and the atheists, the devotees will always win. And Prabhupada had full confidence. So with one last pastime, I'll conclude. When Srila Prabhupada was in Juhu, one time, morning, Giriraj Swami Maharaj had to go out somewhere. I think one Setia, one of the very important life members, relatives had passed away. So he had to go for that house for some kirtans and other program. So he had gone, and in the evening, 5:30, Prabhupada was asking Haridas Prabhu, who was his personal servant. He asked him, I don't hear any sound of kirtans in the temple hall today. What's happening? And Haridas Prabhu told Prabhupada, our devotees have gone to collect some funds. And Prabhupada became very angry. And then Prabhupada was telling that and then later on, Prabhupada called the devotees and he told something very interesting. He told them, you see this Mr. N, how much influential he was. This Mr. N, he had his own newspaper. And he was having political power also. And he was having a lot of supporters in that Juhu locality area. And he even gave out pamphlets against ISKCON. And he was a very big lawyer and a very cunning person with a lot of influence in society. And who are we? Prabhupada said, most of your American boys and girls and you are very new to India, you don't know the local language, what to speak of political support and media support and monetary support, we have nothing.
And we are weaklings and we are coming and taking a land in Juhu that time. And Prabhupada said, we can be thrown out any time if Mr. N wants. But still Mr. N could not throw us out. Why? And then Prabhupada said, because every day we are coming in front of the deities and chanting and dancing. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Prabhupada said, if you always chant and dance in front of Krishna and always accept the protection he is offering, then even whether it be Mr. N or Mr. Hiranyakashipu, whoever it be, he will always be protected. Because, you know, no matter how much the demoniac forces may be powerful and devotees may be weaklings, devotees don't depend on their own strength. Devotees depend on Krishna's strength. And they have full confidence in Krishna. So, a tiny and tender Prahalad depended on Lord Narasimhadev's protection and he was protected. Similarly, our movement was very tiny and tender. Now it is growing bigger. And Prabhupada said, just because we are getting wealth, money, land, property, followers, we should not become neglectful in our sankirtan, in our hearing and chanting and serving the deities. And Prabhupada warned the devotees and said that this should be a regular program in this way. So, Prahlad is one of the most special devotees whose name is always glorified in the Sabha of Vaishnavas, in the assembly of devotees, for his purity in his devotional service, for his dependence on the Supreme Lord, and for his exalted devotional service. And this scene which we heard today, Lord Narasimhadev appearing in the pillar, is actually the climax scene of this whole pastime. Because Hiranyakashipu's torturing his son Prahlad goes on, it keeps building up. When the Mahadatikrama comes to the pinnacle, the highest stage, then Lord Narasimhadev appears from the pillar and kills Hiranyakashipu. I did not do the last part of this chapter, which is the demigods and their wives, they all start dancing and singing very happily because Hiranyakashipu is killed now. And they are showering flowers from the sky, they are singing and they are playing on kettle drums and everything. And then the last part of the chapter, you will find each demigod is offering a prayer. You can read it at your own leisure. The prayer has a connection to what they are most aspiring for in their life. Like Indra is telling, my dear Lord, now onwards I will get the shares of my sacrifice, which I was not getting because of this, you know, Rakshasa Hiranyakashipu, you know, he's saying. Like that, every one of them will say something connected to them only. Atman Manate Jagat, we say, no? Everyone thinks, you know. So it's very interesting. That last section is very interesting. That clearly distinguishes them from Prahlad. How Prahlad is a pure devotee and all these demigods are mixed devotees. We can clearly understand when we read the last section. Different people come. Different devatas, Gandharvas and Kimpurushas. But the last prayer is special. Why? Because they are offered by the Vaikuntavasis. You know what are they saying? Only that last translation I'll read. They conclude with that. This is the only prayer different from the demigods' prayers. The associates of Lord Vishnu in Vaikuntha offered this prayer. O Lord, our supreme giver of shelter, today we have seen your wonderful form as Lord Narasimhadeva, meant for the good fortune of all the world. O Lord, we can understand that Hiranyakashipu was the same Jai who engaged in your service but was cursed by Brahmanas and who thus received the body of a demon. We understand that his having now been killed is your special mercy upon him. So this is a different prayer than the other prayers. Narasimhadeva Bhagavan ki, Prahlad Maharaj ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhaktavinda ki, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.